This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast, your vaccine to the pandemic of clickbait. Joining me for a match reaction to Villa's first win of the season in their first game, extending their unbeaten run across friendlies, cup games and league games to a figure that I've lost count now. It's so impressive. Joining me, Mr. Chris Budd.
Hello.
And Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome back.
Hello.
Phil's still feeling a bit sore that in the last proper episode, 115, if you haven't listened to the show before, this is just a match reaction, the full experience, you can find it on 115. We do under and overrated, and we picked a Northern Ireland legend, and Phil wasn't there. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you should be sorry. I mean, Northern Ireland legend and Michael Oakes is schlong, and what did I get the week before? Two train wreck right backs. Thanks.
did we miss anything out on Mr. Davis, Stephen Davis?
I'm surprised you weren't corrected when you said he scored the winner against England. He assisted the winner against England.
I did.
Ooh. Was it Thingy Healy who scored?
It was Healy, because there's a mural up on the wall in Belfast of Healy scoring. We got that.
Well, they're going to have to take that down.
Just paint over it.
Yeah, we got it painted pretty quick.
Well, I was corrected, but I edited it out.
He has been very, very consistent on the international stage, and he actually carved out quite a long, a few years in the Premier League.
He scored a winner against England, and
assist that he put through, wasn't it? It was quite the assist that he put into it, and that was a reasonable England team as well.
What do you mean the assist?
It's when Northern Ireland beat England. Did he score the goal or did he assist
the goal? Yeah, he scored the goal. He scored the winner. Yeah. Yeah, Dan Rogers, to his credit, said he assisted it. And I said, no, he's not a hero for assisting it.
We'll take our heroes where we can get them.
Yeah. That's what I thought, because so much was made of that. And I always had it imprinted in my mind that, as I said in the intro, where sometimes your mind goes wandering and sometimes you buy into false mythology. But yeah, Rogers was right and I edited him out. Anything else to add? Any other Stephen Davis mistakes?
No, apart from selling them. No, there's no other mistakes.
Ah, yes.
Well, yeah, that's not at my door. That's at Martin O'Neill's door.
Hmm.
We move on. Anything to say about Michael Oakes' schlong?
No, I didn't remember it. All I remembered was a yellow goalkeeper kit. That's all you remember.
Yeah, he always used to wear yellow, didn't he? Yeah.
Well, yeah, he used to get it got called the kangaroo kit, didn't it? Because it was like the Aussie colours for Bosnich, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
What was in his pouch?
Right, anyway, moving on to decent goalkeepers. One featured, Mr. Martinez, in the 1-0 win for Aston Villa, which, as I said, extends our unbeaten run in the league to 5 games. And we pretty much won most of our friendlies as well. I think there's only the Bristol City draw. So in terms of momentum, confidence, whatever else you want to throw in there, it's a long unbeaten run now. And this is a game after 12 minutes, which was decided in the 12th minute, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, the red card decision certainly changes the style of the game we were going to have, I think.
And the bottom line test was Villa have to win this or else. Track record last season against 10 men pretty much cost us. We would have survived relegation a lot easier if we could take care of 10 men teams.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, we're looking at easy another 6 points or so. You're thinking West Ham, Arsenal away, Watford away.
I mean, in the case of Arsenal, when you're 1-0 up against 10 men at half time, you should be putting that game to bed. But in terms of the Sheffield United, it was kind of a shame in one way because you wanted to see how Villa would perform against Sheffield United on an even playing field, because it did warp the game into 10 players sitting deep and allowing Villa to come at them and just hoping that Villa were devoid of ideas and couldn't break them down, which in patches it seemed that way.
Yeah, I think, generally, the way Sheffield United plays, they're going to come and have a go, but they can be very well organised at the back, which was basically what we saw. You know, it was virtually attack versus defence for the best part of, 80 plus minutes. And fair play to, Chris Wilder for that. You know, I think they reshuffled perfectly, made it really difficult for Villa. And I don't think we necessarily played badly. I just think we lacked the spark in our play and the pace to actually kind of break through. You know, two banks of five players.
Yeah, we were saying in Match Club at halftime, we were coming across as very predictable, and Grealish coming in off the left, cutting in, was being met every time by two or three Sheffield United players. It's almost like, they saw him coming and just led him into a cul-de-sac every time.
Yeah, we were actually causing more trouble whenever they had 11 men. I mean, Matty Cash getting a couple of great crossing positions, and he got a lot of space whenever they had a full complement of players. But whenever they lost a player, it just was they just tightened up, and they cut down all the passing lanes, cut down all the space at all. And what they did, we just sort of moved it side to side, and then threw crosses into the box.
Yeah,
I think we started really well. We started really lively, and you thought, oh, this could be a really good game of football. And it just after 20 minutes or so, it kind of stopped being a spectacle.
Just tracking back to the lineups, notable exclusions, Gilbert wasn't there, and also Samata weren't there. And when Smith was asked about why they weren't in the match team squad, he said, selection, that, the players that have been proving it in training got selected, which is a smokescreen for pretty much any possibility now. It's are they being sold? Are they on their way? Phil was saying in Match Club about it was already had waved off Samata to Turkey, which is it's been doing the rounds, but there may be some truth in that. But I can't see Villa getting rid of him without being assured that somebody actually is coming in. Because if somebody does come in, then you understand it. Because, how is he going to get a kick? But if nobody is coming in, and Watkins gets an injury, suddenly we're in a very precarious position. I mean, I know Traore can play up front as well, centrally, but I don't think he's been brought in to be exclusive to that position. I mean, what's your insights into Gilbert and Samata?
Gilbert surprises me, to be honest, because I get why Smith would say, it's just a selection thing. If you've got El Mohammedi, who can be your a second choice right back, and he can play right side of midfield or maybe even centre midfield. He's a relative utility option. He's a player you're probably always going to have in and around the bench. Certainly, you'll always have him in your match day 18. Gilbert, I thought he did really well at the end of last season. I didn't think he did anything wrong. But if Smith's gone out and spent, 16 million quid on cash, he's going to bring him in to play him, and he did really well. So you must have been impressed by him in training. I think we'll probably get a bigger insight if we don't see him in the cup game, down in Bristol. Same with Samata, really. I think if they're not involved, then you're thinking, hang on a minute. If he doesn't want to play him in the cup games, maybe they are potentially surplus to requirements. But I'd personally keep both of them, which some people might disagree with, but I just think you do need the numbers for now. And if they're not playing, I'd say, well, stay for now. If you're not getting in the team, stay, compete. If you're not in the side in January, then we can loan you out with a view to a buy in the summer or something. But I wouldn't just offload people unless they're not going to play. Obviously, that Scotty Hogan, for instance, was never going to play, or James Chester was never going to play, or Kalinic. Those guys are very easy to get out the door, aren't they?
These two, you need a buyer, but these two, you wouldn't be laying them out, you'd be selling them if they're not happy to compete. Because, Gilbert, if he looks just the season ahead, Elmay's not going to be there. because his contract runs out, and it's unlikely that at his age Villa would see him as you know, part of the short-term future. So, you know, Gilbert, he knows he's got a fight on his hand, but from a Villa point of view, you need two right backs, and at this, you know, I'd be happy with Gilbert and Cash, and Gilbert will know that Elmo's not going to be around for you know, after next season, after this season, sorry.
I mean, the fact that, you know, Henry Lansbury, you know, he didn't feature, did he, tonight? And but I'd expect him to play in the cup game at Bristol. So you don't read as much into Lansbury as you think, well, if Gilbert's fit, maybe he would play, or maybe, you know, I know he had Hawes and Taylor on the bench as defensive options. So this, you just can't tell. I think you'll probably get a better gauge, though, give it a couple of weeks and see. But I mean, I wouldn't be selling Gilbert, and I actually wouldn't sell Samatta either right now.
Yeah, I mean, Samatta's the one that's got a bit of heat at the moment in terms of the rumours, in terms of the Turkish thing. But that doesn't make any sense unless Villa are getting somebody else in. And, you know, almost it's like waving a white flag and saying, yeah, we fucked up on Samatta. But I wouldn't write him off completely just yet as well. I mean, you know, he's a guy who, I mean, from just if you want a singular moment, just that goal in the League Cup final, not everybody scores a goal in the Cup final at Wembley. And it showed you that, you know.
Can do it.
Yeah, and it shows you that, you know, on the big stage he can perform. It's just a matter of we're still not a team that's not, you know, that's necessarily creating consistent chances. But we'll soon find out if we're getting somebody, and then, you know, if you can get shop of him now, then probably it is a good move.
If you can make money on him, yeah. But I think if you can't, don't bother.
Yeah, that might be it. It might be a case of they don't really want to sell him, but they think this might be the only chance to get to sell him.
Yeah, but if somebody else is coming in as well, because you've got to balance up the wages as well. They'll have a figure in their mind for what the wage cap you know, should be. And it's like, for example, Hogan. Unlikely that they've got much of a fee there. The main thing is Birmingham wouldn't have been really up for putting a transfer fee, and if they were going to give him wages anywhere near what he was getting at Villa, because, you know, that's not as if they've got money dripping out of their pockets. You know, the good news is that, you know, Villa factor in, you know, the Hogan wages they've saved. They take it off, you know, they can put it up against whatever they're paying Watkins. But anyway, back to the game. In terms of how Villa set up, I thought, look, you know, Louise and Hourihan were still kind of sitting a bit deep, considering United were down to 10 men, and I thought, you know, maybe Louise could have pushed up a bit more, or Hourihan. I mean, how would you position those two against a 10-man setup?
You'd probably have one sitting a little deeper and give one license to bomb on, wouldn't you? And you'd let them interchange, in theory. If either of them want to get stuck in, they can. I think Hourihan tended to drift out to the left a little bit more. You saw, certainly early on, he had a couple of really good crosses into the box and set pieces and stuff. So he always gives you that. But you also saw, you know, I think literally just before we scored, he got subbed and walked straight off behind the goal by the Holt end. And he was not best pleased to have been subbed off. So I think he was frustrated as well.
Which
I don't think is a bad sign. I mean, you want players to be frustrated when they get brought off. The fact that Villa scored from the, you know, the resulting corner is, you know, relief for everyone, I suppose.
Yeah, I think Hourihan probably was more frustrated at his own performance, because he had a couple of decent chances to pull the trigger. One in the first half that he really should have hit the target, and he just stuck it over
the bar, didn't he?
Yeah, but then when you're talking about Louise and Hourihan, they both have a great shot on them, and they're very reluctant to pull the trigger. And a game like that, I mean, I know they want to do the patient build-up and not show that we're getting frustrated, but they had ample opportunities to test the keeper, and the Sheffield United keeper is a bit shaky at the minute.
And you got to also factor in, because Watkins is a fox in the box, and he's at the right place at the right time. He's, you know, there's potential spillage there if you're shooting from that distance, especially the zip that Hourihan and Louise get on. So there's, you know, that it's worth them having a pop, because Watkins could pounce on that second ball if, you know, the keeper parries it or whatever.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I think that was the frustration for me in that, you know, we never really got up ahead of steam and actually made the goalkeeper, you know, work that hard particularly. You know, he picked the ball out of his net, but he didn't really, you know, it wasn't like we were peppering the goal. And I know Grealish had a couple of chances where you'd expect him to hit the target, especially with his second chance where he tries to do it at the near post. But we didn't really, whether it was we didn't pull the trigger, I thought Watkins was unlucky. He obviously had his one that he whipped just over the angle of post and bar, which would have been a brilliant goal. But I just think we didn't work the keeper enough, whether that was reluctance, whether that was we didn't work the opportunity. And I'd also give Sheffield United a lot of credit because I think they did set themselves up well. They stuck to their task and they did make it difficult for us. And sometimes you just have to hold your hands up and say, well, it was a hard nut to crack, but we got the job done.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, the score and points are all well and good. But, I mean, stick with the midfield. McGinn, I mean, when you look at the stats, I'm not that bothered about stats, to be honest, because, you know, you watch the game and that's where you get your feel for what happened. But the stats kind of do back up what you saw with your own eyes, because in terms of touches of the ball, McGinn was on 56, which is way down on anybody else. And that includes Horahan. Horahan was in 69 and he only played an hour of the game, 30 minutes less. Just for comparison, Louise on 98. So what you read from that is, you know, Sheffield United sitting back and the play starts deep with Louise every time, and you know, it's a slow build up until we get around their 18 yard box and try to, you know, crack the nut. And Grealish was on 79, which is, in a game like that, is quite low for Grealish. You'd expect him to be up there with Louise. When you consider in games, even against Burton, we didn't really kind of our midfield overall is, and against Manchester United in that friendly, when we had a stronger midfield out, obviously against Sheffield United, full strength midfield, isn't controlling games necessarily as much as you'd want them to control, especially at Villa Park. They kind of get bypassed a bit easy.
Yeah, certainly against 10 men as well. You think, yeah, that it's all very good and well having a lot of the ball, but you've got to do stuff with it.
So what's the problem here? What's the weakness?
For me, it's tempo. It's that being able to actually move the ball at pace. I mean, you know, I'm going to use a very extreme example, not that we're anywhere near that comparison, but you watch a side like Barcelona when they're in full tilt, especially the Barcelona sides under sort of Pep, and it would be very slow up until that final third. But when they need to sort of put the afterburners on, they can go pop, 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 and it's very quick one and two touch passing, and they can move the ball well. They can go through the afterburners. It's the same with someone like Man City and these really good sides. When they're playing against two banks of five, they have that speed of touch to go pop, pop, pop and pull a team apart very quickly. Villa just don't have that yet, or that one killer pass that can take two or three men out of the game. You either have to move the ball quickly or you need straight line speed, and we don't have that yet. You know, Trezeguet is a willing runner and I think Cash could probably grow into it. But if you've got someone, for example, like Wolves have got with a Traore, you know he can just put his head down, get to the byline and take a man or take two men out of the game. We didn't commit.
Grealish was a
men.
Bit slow sometimes of releasing the ball. I mean, and noticeably.
Yeah, we didn't commit, and then we didn't overload them enough. But I think that will come in time, to be honest. I think there's enough positives to take from it, but there's definitely some fine tuning to do.
I think I wonder, is the McGinn thing, it's still maybe a hangover of just how bad we were defensively for a lot of last season. Is his mind, you know, is he not fully like releasing himself to go for it, and is he sort of harrying about and sort of like holding back just so there's a few men back? It reminds me a bit of whenever we were saying he needed a rest last season just before he got injured. It's sort of, he's sort of in that sort of form, that sort of mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he hasn't, since he came back from injury, he hasn't really got out of, let's say, third gear, has he?
No, I mean, I remember his first game, we did a podcast, didn't we, namely like the Snap, Crackle and Pop, and that's exactly what he's lacking at the minute. It's that real just live wire energy, but done in the right way, I think, at the moment. You see him, you know, he does a lot of running, but it's sort of chasing shadows and the game passing him by rather than him necessarily, you know, being efficient, I suppose is the word I'm trying to say, and he's, in the way he plays. It seems very inefficient right now.
In terms of, I mean, I mentioned that Grealish a few times was guilty of probably not releasing it early enough or not pulling the trigger in some cases early enough. How do you get around it? I think one thing is his understanding with Ollie Watkins will obviously grow because, you know, we're yeah. in early days. I think if you can get Louise working with him a bit closer as well, I mean, Louise is sitting back playing deeper, but he can get on Grealish's brainwave because he's got the talent to complement him.
I think as well it's there's a big thing with Target and Horahan. If Jack has an overlap, especially when he's cutting in from the left, if you have that overlap, you occupy the right back all yeah. of a sudden, then they either have to double up on him. It's occupying the opposition enough so that Jack can get one player one-on-one. And if Jack's yeah. one-on-one with most people, you're going to back him to cut inside and then you'd think he'll get the shot away. But when teams double up on him, you think, well, then he's going to have to bring them in and either give the ball to someone else like a Watkins or McGinn or Horahan or Target a lot of the time. Because Target was the out ball very often, but he didn't really deliver very often.
Yeah, but the overload has to happen as Grealish makes his move or else yes. it doesn't really work. And that's the thing. They've got to get that timing down.
I mean, a great example of that, well, two of them were Grealish and Target last season, to be fair. The Brighton goal with the last kick of the game was a great example yeah. of that. Grealish took two men out of the game. And the Leicester semi-final was exactly that, where Jack would hold on to the ball, but he would let Target bomb on past him and he'd just play the ball in at the right time. It was brilliant.
Yeah, because that's the thing. If Grealish has got the ball and he's running into traffic and he's occupying him and then the runner comes late, that's kind of too late. It needs to happen as he makes his move. I mean, I always remember, you know, this is going back when Villa were chasing the title against United back in the 92-93 season. And that Manchester United team, when we went to Old Trafford, it wasn't like somebody, you know, the out ball was down the line, somebody overlapping. It was like they would come at you like eight players in a line, you know, wave after wave of attack. And Villa played, you know, to get the draw there was an astonishing result. And then you knew from that result we're in for the title race. But it was a team attacking as one, timed it's like a surge, like a wave.
Yeah, and they had pace, didn't they? They'd have had Giggs and Kanchelskis down either wing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Villa, they'll either get it to Grealish and then players are kind of standing around, you know, waiting to see what they should do. And it's not, everybody's not instantly on the same wavelength, like, right, if Grealish does this, I go this way, you know, this guy goes that way. They've got to kind of sort that out. I mean, it's obviously a coaching thing. I mean, we'll get onto it in a minute, but we have to sort out our open play because this time we were rescued by a set play. And it was good to see Mings and Konsa getting in because they're going to have to be effective and chip in with the goals. I mean, any good team across the board has their centre-backs chipping in, let's say 5 or 6 goals each a season.
I mean, I think whenever you're talking about Grealish, he's quite... It's decision-making. It's a 50-50 decision that he has most times. Like either if it's which corner to hit the ball into for a shot or who to play the through ball to. And tonight, it was just like he just picked the wrong decision each time. I mean, it's just typical that Southgate was in the stands watching him again. He'll have been making the notes in his notepad again. Just X, X, X. Nope.
I mean, it's a different level of opposition, but he was a live wire against Burton. He was fantastic.
He ran the game, didn't he? And I actually thought he did really well in the England game when he came on for, you know, 15, 20 minutes. I think it was just, I don't know, I think, again, you give Sheffield United credit. I think they set themselves up to stifle him and it was just two banks of very well-organised defensive players. I mean, you saw literally the start of the second half from the kickoff, they dropped back to their 18-yard line straight from the kickoff. So that was the tactic. Now, they were playing for 0-0.
I mean, what I'm saying in conclusion is Smith has to work out a way when Grealish is doing X, Y or Z, what the other players do to kind of aid him, because it gets to this weird position once he goes off on one. Grealish picks up the ball and, you know, starts dancing with three of their players. It's almost like the supporters, I mean, we're watching now from TV sets or, you know, phones or whatever, and the players on the pitch are doing the same thing. We're just waiting to see what he does next rather than the players on the pitch getting involved somehow.
I mean, I think because there's sometimes, especially when we go two up front, you've got Watkins who likes the ball in the air as well, and Davis. There is an argument for putting the ball in the box if you've got a quality delivery rather than there just being an aimless sort of lump into the penalty area. There's nothing wrong if you can put quality in there, you know, deliver.
We were saying, it's mentioned Davis, we were saying on Match Club how Villa seem to play better when Davis is on the pitch, and if he could add, you know, if he could become, let's say, make the contribution of a, you know, 10 goals a season striker, and so you knew that if he was on the pitch he would actually, there'd be a chance of goals, then you've got a player there who's really going to contribute, because he helps Grealish, and he pretty much improves everybody, yeah.
I think what he does really, really well that goes kind of unnoticed is obviously he holds the ball up well, but what he does is he's great in the transition from defence to attack, because he can pick the ball up sort of in his own half, you know, from a lump up the park or a ball down the line, and he just lets people come into play. He's a really good foil for other players, and that's important. Whereas Watkins, I think he can do that, but I think he's more of a running behind. So I just wonder if, I mean, you saw that later on in the game when Smith obviously wanted to chase the 3 points, that we now know we've got two guys who can probably play together. I mean, they won't have, you know, played much together before, but they have all the attributes between them to be potentially quite a good front two. And I think that's really good to know that we've got that as an option.
Yeah, I'd probably play them both against Bristol City in the Cup game. Just try it. Yeah, give it a run out.
Of course, playing the two of them together, that released Jack into sort of a floating role. And, you know,
yeah, more like a number 10 then.
Mm-hmm. Did look like a good shape then in the last 15 minutes.
And then you saw like Grealish had much more space on the ball, because Grealish tends to bounce off Davis quite well. He loves getting that second ball. Yeah. Louise is the same. I think Davis can be potentially quite an important tool for Villa. I don't necessarily think he's going to be the main man, but I've referred back to, you know, you sort of think of how like Heskey used to be at Liverpool when he was the foil for Fowler, yeah, or Owen at that, you know, in that sort of Houllier era. He was a really good foil for other players, even if he wasn't the main goal machine.
Whatever the circumstances are of a game where we have to break down two banks of four, then having this Davis option that gives you a totally different dimension could be very useful in that scenario as well.
Yeah.
Somebody we didn't see because there was too much, there was international clearance, work permits, etc. And because of the COVID situation, they didn't really couldn't get it over the line in time. I think it had to be lunchtime Friday, was Traore. But we were potentially see him against Bristol City, I would imagine, in the Cup.
Yeah, you'd expect to, yeah.
I mean, this is a good thing about staying in the League Cup is in terms of when you've got a load of new players, and it, you know, it will do us good to go through the next round as well, because potentially we might have a new signing or two before the next round. Is it gives you an extra game to blood those players in, or, you know, try new things out.
Yep, and to the penalty save.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Lundstrom and Martinez on his debut pulls off a marvellous save for Aston Villa.
That would have given supporters a big...
huge, yeah.
Bolt of confidence in their number one, and his overall gameplay, you know,
very tidy, wasn't it? Very tidy
claiming
in possession,
things.
Claimed things, came and punched, didn't he? I think he punched once, which was a really strong hand. And obviously the penalty save is brilliant, especially when you factor in the new rules where he can't step forward and get momentum. He has to go straight across
and right in the corner.
Because it's a great penalty. So he's, you know, it's a good save, really good save. So I think the defence will take a lot of heart from that. Fortunately, you know, normally you think if you're getting a South American goalkeeper, you might have like language problems. But of course, he's been in England such a long time. His English is quite good.
What do you mean quite good? It's better than most of his teammates.
Well, yeah. But again, his communication will be great. So I think he will slot in reasonably well. I mean, we'll see how that develops. But I think they'll gain confidence from having him behind them.
Yeah, his ball control is better than a lot of his teammates as well. Some of the passes were fizz back into his feet, and he just one touch and then just waited and just played on. So, I don't know, get Tom Heaton back and move him into midfield, see how he does.
He could do with a bit of height in midfield as well.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, solved so many problems. Martinez could be the signing of the century so far.
Yeah, and I was just pleased for him that, you know, he made a strong debut, and him and the team will take confidence. I actually thought all the new signings have done well since they've come in. Now we've seen they've actually be it, you know, the friendly or the cup game last week or tonight, they've all had little inputs in the games. I thought Cash will take a lot of confidence from his performance, and I think the back four in general. Admittedly, Sheffield United didn't throw much at them, but I thought they handled what they had thrown at them reasonably well. I thought Target did okay. He was obviously a little bit unlucky for the penalty. Mings was solid. Konsa did well, obviously with a slight hamstring issue, and took his goal really well, like a really, really well planted header for the winner.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take a few games for like Maddie Cash to get integrated, because not only has he got to sort out his understanding with his back four, but also Trezeguet in front of him. I think Mings shouted at him a couple of times, actually, in terms of the communication down that right flank. But, you know, he'll definitely get there. And I'm quite looking forward to him seeing his contribution going forward a bit more. I think he had one shot, but it was kind of blocked out straight away. I think it fired into traffic. But you saw that they know that's up their sleeve, that he can get forward, cut in, and, you know, he's not afraid to having a pop.
Yeah, and I saw a hint of that long throw a couple of times near the end when he threw it down into the corner.
Yeah.
Happy days.
No, that's what I was saying about the centre-backs put themselves about a bit and get more of a, you know, be more of a threat, then suddenly that cash long throw becomes even more of an asset.
No, he had a good eye for a clearance as well there, because he stuck in the corner a few times before. We've seen our players, you know, just let the ball run out and things. Cash just put his foot through it and got it right down into Sheffield United's half, so we could regroup again. So it's a good footballing brain.
Yeah, I think that's all from the Sheffield United game. Is there anything else? I mean, the important thing is the win, because the Villa we've been used to would have probably drawn again. And Sheffield United's kind of a barometer team, because we've managed to pull out some, when I say we've drawn against them, we've pulled out some draws out of freakish circumstances, whether it be a Hawkeye incident or a very, very late comeback. And we've managed to, the swing on beating them 1-0 to scraping draws in the past is our first positive move that we have evidence of, that we're going in the right direction. I think if we beat Fulham, then you know that we potentially won't get relegated, because it seems that we can take care of business from the teams that maybe aren't the strongest in the league.
I'd like to think so at this stage. I mean, obviously it's a bit early to tell, but you know, you can only beat the teams that are in front of you. And I think if we've got this sort of steely professionalism about us, where, you know, we don't necessarily need a lot of chances and have to play particularly well to beat a reasonably well-drilled Sheffield United side, and that must be a good sign.
Yeah, because you got to remember, we're watching games and they're like 5-2 and they're 4-3 from the Premier League so far. But you've got to look at the way we ended the lockdown of last season. Where did we restrict teams to like 3 shots in the last 4 games?
Yeah, absolutely. And we had a really good defensive record, didn't we, in the last 4 matches? Two goals conceded. I think we've conceded 2 in the last 5 Premier League games.
So be prepared for the new George Graham's Arsenal. 1-0 to the Villa will become a chant soon, if there was crowds at Villa Park. But I don't mind a period of that if we're beating teams 1-0 every week, as long as those include Leeds, who will be thinking they're going to be banging in goals every game.
Well, it's a good barometer for Leeds, because they play Sheffield United on Saturday. So
yeah, they do indeed, yeah.
Yorkshire derby.
And Sheffield United have got a tough bunch of fixtures, as Sky Sports kept repeating during the game. So if they don't get something against Leeds, they may be may have their confidence broken if they go, you know, 4 or 5 games without a win. But anyway, next game up will be the cup game against Bristol City. I think there'll be a sterner test than Burton. And we were flapping a bit against Burton until Grealish turned on the afterburners. So hopefully, I think you might have to go a bit stronger to take care of business with Bristol City.
I think so. I think you've got to take the cup seriously. And I think you've got to use it as a really good opportunity to keep developing your squad. You know, I think with Konsa having his little hamstring strain or whatever it was, tightness, I don't think he'll play. I don't think they'll risk him. So you're going to have to play Mings, because, of course, with Engels being out, we're actually quite short on centre-back options if you want to take 2 out and put 2 in. So I would expect Mings to play.
Mings had something like 122 touches against Burton. So I don't know. I can't understand why a centre back would have that many touches against Burton. It's just
we had a lot of the ball, didn't we?
That just popped out. He had more touches than anybody else. While we're here, Scott Hogan's now left Aston Villa to Birmingham, but he hasn't actually played for Birmingham yet since he's signed. But just to give you some context from what difference between, well, there were 2 players that came from Brentford. I'm going to ask you, in the tradition of Scott Hogan touch count challenge, to guess how many touches Ollie Watkins had against Sheffield United. Who wants to go first?
I'm going to go with 30.
Mr. Shaw?
I'll go 48.
Ooh, second guess?
33.
Mr. Shaw?
I'll go down 38.
Right. Somebody's in the ballpark. Last final guess. That's the only clue I'm giving you.
27.
Mr. Shaw, you're going to have to hit this one on the head to win this one, Mr. Shaw.
36.
Chris Budd gets it. 31 it was.
Back in the game. Back in the game. It's been far too long.
Just to give you a more like an insight into Watkins. Against Burton, how many touches? One guess each.
35.
Mr. Shaw?
Nah, I'll go 38 again.
Not bad, Bud. Not bad. 34. Oh. He knows his Watkins.
it's just like XG. They don't count. Touches don't count. only two touches accounted that night. One he put in and one he smashed over the bar.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I only mention this just as a comparison to Hogan. So Ollie Watkins seems to be a 30-touch-a-game kind of guy.
Oh, what a guy.
Which shows you he gets involved a bit more, is I think the conclusion to this little sauté.
Breakthrough.
Yeah, anyway, we'll keep an eye on that, see how that one goes. Right, just before we go, I just want to give a quick shout-out to the My Old Man Said patrons. I'll do the individual shout-outs on the next show, but thank you very much for supporting the show, and thanks to all that joined us in Match Club. We'll do a Match Club for the Bristol City game, but then we'll have a proper one for the Fulham game. So if you have joined as a patron, do make sure you've connected up to Match Club. I'll put out a notice of how to do that, just in case there's any new people who haven't got round to it yet. And if you want to join us in Match Club, all you have to do is become a My Old Man Said patron, and you'll get access to extra shows as well. Actually, there was an extra version of episode 115 that I put out, which I think I should have put that Team America intro on the main show, to be honest. It was quite funny. What was the closing thing? Oh, it was our predictions, wasn't it? Mm. Yeah, Phil, where do you think we'll finish at the moment?
I'm going to be positive for once, and I'm going to say 10th.
Nice.
We said we're going to do it on the main show after the transfer window closes, but for those people who haven't listened to the patron show, or I think Dan said 10th, I said 11th. What did you say? You said 11th to 14th, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
So he hasn't got the balls to commit to one place. He has to spread bet.
That's how you win the touch count.
Anyway, any closing remarks in this match reaction show?
Just there's like one interesting stat going about Martinez. It's the first keeper to save a penalty and keep a clean sheet at Villa Park, which I can't believe. He's definitely the first to save a penalty in his debut, but the other stat floating about is if that's the first thing, then it was the dream debut.
Wow.
Yeah. You'll have to ring up one of your big stats buddies to get them to validate that, Phil. big lover of stats is our Phil. Anyway, right, until next time, until the Unbeaten Roadshow continues on, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Healy seems to be moving sprightly enough, considering his worry about thigh injury. Here's Davis. It's a good ball. The flag stays down. Healy! Oh! What a moment for Northern Ireland! What a moment for Windsor Park! They're off the bench. The manager, no change of expression. What about that for your 19th international goal? It's against England!
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.